This is Audible Kids!
Listening Library presents The Breadwinner by Deborah Ellis. Read for you by Rita Wolf. To the Children of War. Chapter 1. I can read that letter as well as Father can, Parvana whispered into the folds of her chador. Well, almost. She didn't dare say those words out loud. The man sitting beside her father would not want to hear her voice, nor would anyone else in the Kabul market. Parvana was there only to help her father walk to the market and back home again after work. She sat well back on the blanket, her head and most of her face covered by her chador. She wasn't really supposed to be outside at all. The Taliban had ordered all the girls and women in Afghanistan to stay inside their homes. They even forbade girls to go to school. Parvana had had to leave her sixth grade class, and her sister, Nuria, was not allowed to go to her high school. Their mother had been kicked out of her job as a writer for a Kabul radio station. For more than a year now, they had all been stuck inside one room, along with 5-year-old Mariam and 2-year-old Ali. Parvana did get out for a few hours most days to help her father walk. She was always glad to go outside, even though it meant sitting for hours on a blanket spread over the hard ground of the marketplace. At least it was something to do. She had even got used to holding her tongue and hiding her face. She was small for her 11 years. As a small girl, she could usually get away with being outside without being questioned. "I need this girl to help me walk," her father would tell any Talib who asked, pointing to his leg. He had lost the lower part of his leg when the high school he was teaching in was bombed. His insides had been hurt somehow too. He was often tired. "I have no son at home, except for an infant," he would explain. Parvana would slump down further on the blanket and try to make herself look smaller. She was afraid to look up at the soldiers. She had seen what they did, especially to women. The way they would whip and beat someone they thought should be punished. Sitting in the marketplace day after day, she had seen a lot. When the Taliban were around, what she wanted most of all was to be invisible. Now the customer asked her father to read his letter again.
"Read it slowly so that I can remember it for my family."
Parvana would have liked to get a letter. Mail delivery had recently started again in Afghanistan, after years of being disrupted by war. Many of her friends had fled the country with their families. She thought they were in Pakistan, but she wasn't sure, so she couldn't write to them. Her own family had moved so often because of the bombing that her friends no longer knew where she was. "Afghans cover the earth like stars cover the sky," her father often said. Her father finished reading the man's letter a second time. The customer thanked him and paid.
"I will look for you when it is time to write a reply."
Most people in Afghanistan could not read or write. Parvana was one of the lucky ones. Both of her parents had been to university, and they believed in education for everyone, even girls. Customers came and went as the afternoon wore on. Most spoke Dari, the same language Parvana spoke best. When a customer spoke Pashto, she could recognize most of it, but not all. Her parents could speak English, too. Her father had gone to university in England. That was a long time ago. The market was a very busy place. Men shopped for their families, and peddlers hawked their goods and services. Some, like the tea shop, had their own stalls. With such a big urn and so many trays of cups, it had to stay in one place. Tea boys ran back and forth into the labyrinth of the marketplace, carrying tea to customers who couldn't leave their own shops, then running back again with the empty cups. "I could do that," Parvana whispered. She'd like to be able to run around in the market, to know its winding streets as well as she knew the four walls of her home. Her father turned to look at her.
"I'd rather see you running around the schoolyard."
He turned around again to call out to the passing men.
"Anything written? Anything read? Pashto and Dari. Wonderful items for sale."
Parvana frowned. It wasn't her fault she wasn't in school. She would rather be there too, instead of sitting on this uncomfortable blanket, her back and bottom getting sore. She missed her friends, her blue and white school uniform, and doing new things each day. History was her favorite subject, especially Afghan history. Everybody had come to Afghanistan. The Persians came 4,000 years ago. Alexander the Great came too, followed by the Greeks, Arabs, Turks, British, and finally the Soviets. One of the conquerors, Tamerlane from Samarkand, cut off the heads of his enemies and stacked them in huge piles, like melons at a fruit stand. All these people had come to Parvana's beautiful country to try to take it over, and the Afghans had kicked them all out again. But now the country was ruled by the Taliban militia. They were Afghans, and they had very definite ideas about how things should be run. When they first took over the capital city of Kabul and forbade girls to go to school, Parvana wasn't terribly unhappy. She had a test coming up in arithmetic that she hadn't prepared for, and she was in trouble for talking in class again. The teacher was going to send a note to her mother, but the Taliban took over first. "What are you crying for?" she had asked Nuria, who couldn't stop sobbing. "I think a holiday's very nice." Parvana was sure the Taliban would let them go back to school in a few days. By then, her teacher would have forgotten all about sending a tattletale note to her mother. "You're just stupid," Nuria screamed at her. "Leave me alone." One of the difficulties of living with your whole family in one room was that it was impossible to really leave anyone alone. Wherever Nuria went, there was Parvana, and wherever Parvana went, there was Nuria. Both of Parvana's parents had come from old, respected Afghan families. With their education, they had earned high salaries. They had had a big house with a courtyard, a couple of servants, a television set, a refrigerator, a car. Nuria had had her own room. Parvana had shared a room with her little sister, Mariam. Mariam chattered a lot, but she thought Parvana was wonderful. It had certainly been wonderful to get away from Nuria sometimes. That house had been destroyed by a bomb. The family had moved several times since then. Each time they moved to a smaller place. Every time their house was bombed, they lost more of their things. With each bomb, they got poorer. Now they lived together in one small room. There had been a war going on in Afghanistan for more than 20 years, twice as long as Parvana had been alive. At first it was the Soviets who rolled their big tanks into the country and flew warplanes that dropped bombs on villages and the countryside. Parvana was born 1 month before the Soviets started going back to their own country. "You were such an ugly baby, the Soviets couldn't stand to be in the same country with you," Nuria was fond of telling her. "They fled back across the border in horror, as fast as their tanks could carry them." After the Soviets left, the people who had been shooting at the Soviets decided they wanted to keep shooting at something, so they shot at each other. Many bombs fell on Kabul during that time. Many people died. Bombs had been part of Parvana's whole life. Every day, every night, rockets would fall out of the sky and someone's house would explode. When the bombs fell, people ran. First they ran one way, then they ran another, trying to find a place where the bombs wouldn't find them. When she was younger, Parvana was carried. When she got bigger, she had to do her own running. Now most of the country was controlled by the Taliban. The word Taliban meant religious scholars. But Parvana's father told her that religion was about teaching people how to be better human beings, how to be kinder. "The Taliban are not making Afghanistan a kinder place to live," he said. Although bombs still fell on Kabul, they didn't fall as often as they used to. There was still a war going on in the north of the country, and that was where most of the killing took place these days. After a few more customers had come and gone, father suggested they end their work for the day. Parvana jumped to her feet, then collapsed back down again. Her foot was asleep. She rubbed it, then tried again. This time she was able to stand. First she gathered up all the little items they were trying to sell. Dishes, pillowcases, household ornaments that had survived the bombings. Like many Afghans, they sold what they could. Mother and Nuria regularly went through what was left of the family's belongings to see what they could spare. There were so many people selling things in Kabul, Parvana marveled, that there was anyone left to buy them. Father packed his pens and writing paper in his shoulder bag. Leaning on his walking stick and taking Parvana's arm, he slowly stood up. Parvana shook the dust out of the blanket, folded it up, and they were on their way. For short distances, Father could manage with just his walking stick. For longer journeys, he needed Parvana to lean on.
"You're just the right height," he said.
"What will happen when I grow?"
"Then I will grow with you."
Father used to have a false leg, but he sold it. He hadn't planned to. False legs had to be specially made, and one person's false leg didn't necessarily fit another. But when a customer saw Father's leg on the blanket, he ignored the other things for sale and demanded to buy the leg. He offered such a good price that Father eventually relented. There were a lot of false legs for sale in the market now. Since the Taliban decreed that women must stay inside, many husbands took their wives' false legs away.
"You're not going anywhere, so why do you need a leg?" they asked.
There were bombed-out buildings all over Kabul. Neighborhoods had turned from homes and businesses into bricks and dust. Kabul had once been beautiful. Nuria remembered whole sidewalks, traffic lights that changed color, evening trips to restaurants and cinemas, browsing in fine shops for clothes and books. For most of Parvana's life, the city had been in ruins, and it was hard for her to imagine it another way. It hurt her to hear stories of old Kabul before the bombing. She didn't want to think about everything the bombs had taken away, including her father's health and their beautiful home. It made her angry, and since she could do nothing with her anger, it made her sad. They left the busy part of the market and turned down a side street to their building. Parvana carefully guided her father around the potholes and broken places in the road. "How do women in burqas manage to walk along these streets?" Parvana asked her father. "How do they see where they are going?"
"They fall down a lot," her father replied.
He was right. Parvana had seen them fall. She looked at her favourite mountain. It rose up majestically at the end of her street.
"What's the name of that mountain?" she had asked her father soon after they moved to their new neighbourhood.
"That's Mount Parvana."
"It is not," Nuria had said scornfully.
"You shouldn't lie to the child," Mother had said. The whole family had been out walking together, in the time before the Taliban. Mother and Nuria just wore light scarves around their hair. Their faces soaked up the Kabul sunshine.
"Mountains are named by people," Father said. "I am a person, and I name that mountain Mount Parvana."
Her mother gave in, laughing. Father laughed too, and Parvana and baby Mariam, who didn't even know why she was laughing. Even grumpy Nuria joined in. The sound of the family's laughter scampered up Mount Parvana and back down into the street. Now, Parvana and her father slowly made their way up the steps of their building. They lived on the third floor of an apartment building. It had been hit in a rocket attack, and half of it was rubble. The stairs were on the outside of the building, zigzagging back and forth on their way up. They had been damaged by the bomb and didn't quite meet in places. Only some parts of the staircase had a railing.
"Never rely on the railing," Father told Parvana over and over.
Going up was easier for Father than going down, but it still took a long time. Finally, they reached the door of their home and went inside. Chapter 2 Mother and Nuria were cleaning again. Father kissed Ali and Mariam, went to the bathroom to wash the dust off his feet, face and hands, then stretched out on a toshak for a rest. Parvana put down her bundles and started to take off her chador.
"We need water," Nuria said.
"Can't I sit down for a while first?" Parvana asked her mother.
"You will rest better when your work is done. Now go. The water tank is almost empty."
Parvana groaned. If the tank was almost empty, she'd have to make 5 trips to the water tap. 6 because her mother hated to see an empty water bucket.
"If you had fetched it yesterday when Mother asked you, you wouldn't have so much to haul today," Nuria said, as Parvana passed by her to get to the water bucket.
Nuria smiled her superior big sister smile and flipped her hair back over her shoulders. Parvana wanted to kick her.
Nuria had beautiful hair, long and thick. Parvana's hair was thin and stringy. She wanted hair like her sister's, and Nuria knew this.
Parvana grumbled all the way down the steps and down the block to the neighbourhood tap. The trip home with a full bucket was worse, especially the 3 flights of stairs. Being angry at Nuria gave her the energy to do it, so Parvana kept grumbling.
Nuria never goes for water, nor does Mother. Mariam doesn't either. She doesn't have to do anything.
Parvana knew she was mumbling nonsense, but she kept it up anyway.
Mariam was only 5, and she couldn't carry an empty bucket downstairs, let alone a full bucket upstairs.
Mother and Nuria had to wear burkas whenever they went outside, and they couldn't carry a pail of water up those uneven, broken stairs if they were wearing burkas. Plus, it was dangerous for women to go outside without a man. Parvana knew she had to fetch the water because there was nobody else in the family who could do it. Sometimes this made her resentful. Sometimes it made her proud. One thing she knew, it didn't matter how she felt. Good mood or bad, the water had to be fetched, and she had to fetch it. Finally, the tank was full. The water bucket was full, and Parvana could slip off her sandals, hang up her chadar, and relax. She sat on the floor beside Mariam and watched her little sister draw a picture.
You're very talented, Mariam. One day you will sell your drawings for tons and tons of money. We will be very rich and live in a palace, and you will wear blue silk dresses.
Green silk, Mariam said.
Green silk, Parvana agreed.
Instead of just sitting there, you could help us over here. Mother and Nuria were cleaning out the cupboard again.
You cleaned out the cupboard 3 days ago.
Are you going to help us or not?
Not, Parvana thought, but she got to her feet.
Mother and Nuria were always cleaning something. Since they couldn't work or go to school, they didn't have much else to do.
The Taliban have said we must stay inside, but that doesn't mean we have to live in filth, Mother was fond of saying.
Parvana hated all that cleaning. It used up the water she had to haul. The only thing worse was for Nuria to wash her hair. Parvana looked around their tiny room. All of the furniture she remembered from their other houses had been destroyed by bombs or stolen by looters. All they had now was a tall wooden cupboard, which had been in the room when they rented it. It held the few belongings they had been able to save. 2 toshaks were set against the walls, and that was all the furniture they had. They used to have beautiful Afghan carpets. Parvana remembered tracing the intricate patterns of them with her fingers when she was younger. Now there was just cheap matting over the cement floor. Parvana could cross their main room with 10 regular steps one way and 12 regular steps the other way. It was usually her job to sweep the mat with their tiny whisk broom. She knew every inch of it. At the end of the room was the lavatory. It was a very small room with a platform toilet, not the modern Western toilet they used to have. The little propane cookstove was kept in there because a tiny vent, high in the wall, kept fresh air coming into the room. The water tank was there too, a metal drum that held 5 pails of water, and the wash basin was next to that. Other people lived in the part of the building that was still standing. Parvana saw them as she went to fetch water or went out with her father to the marketplace.
We must keep our distance, Father told her. The Taliban encourage neighbor to spy on neighbor. It is safer to keep to ourselves.
It may have been safer, Parvana often thought, but it was also lonely. Maybe there was another girl her age right close by, but she'd never find out. Father had his books. Mariam played with Ali. Nuria had Mother. But Parvana didn't have anybody.
Mother and Nuria had wiped down the cupboard shelves. Now they were putting things back.
Here is a pile of things for your father to sell in the market. Put them by the door, Mother directed her.
The vibrant red cloth caught Parvana's eye.
My good shalwar kameez! We can't sell that!
I decide what we're going to sell, not you. There's no longer any use for it unless you're planning to go to parties you haven't bothered to tell me about.
Parvana knew there was no point arguing. Ever since she had been forced out of her job, Mother's temper grew shorter every day. Parvana put the outfit with the other items by the door. She ran her fingers over the intricate embroidery. It had been an Eid present from her aunt in Mazari Sharif, a city in the north of Afghanistan. She hoped her aunt would be angry at her mother for selling it. "Why don't we sell Nuria's good clothes? She's not going anywhere."
"She'll need them when she gets married."
Nuria made a superior sort of face at Parvana. As an extra insult, she tossed her head to make her long hair swing. "I pity whoever marries you," Parvana said. "He will be getting a stuck-up snob for a wife."
"That's enough," Mother said.
Parvana fumed. Mother always took Nuria's side. Parvana hated Nuria, and she'd hate her mother too if she wasn't her mother. Her anger melted when she saw her mother pick up the parcel of Hossein's clothes and put it away on the top shelf of the cupboard. Her mother always looked sad when she touched Hossein's clothes. Nuria hadn't always been the oldest. Hossein had been the oldest child. He had been killed by a landmine when he was 14 years old. Mother and father never talked about him. To remember him was too painful. Nuria had told Parvana about him during one of the rare times they were talking to each other. Hossein had laughed a lot and was always trying to get Nuria to play games with him, even though she was a girl. "Don't be such a princess," he'd say. "A little football will do you good." Sometimes, Nuria said, she'd give in and play, and Hossein would always kick the ball to her in a way that she could stop it and kick it back.
"He used to pick you up and play with you a lot," Nuria told Parvana. "He actually seemed to like you. Imagine that."
From Nuria's stories, Hossein sounded like someone Parvana would have liked too. Seeing the pain in her mother's face, Parvana put her anger away and quietly helped get supper ready. The family ate Afghan style, sitting around a plastic cloth spread out on the floor. Food cheered everyone up, and the family lingered after the meal was over. At some point, Parvana knew, a secret signal would pass between her mother and Nuria, and the two of them would rise at the same instant to begin clearing up. Parvana had no idea how they did it. She would watch for a sign to go between the two of them, but she could never see one. Ali was dozing on Mother's lap, a piece of naan in his little fist. Every now and then he would realize he was falling asleep and would rouse himself as if he hated the thought of missing something. He tried to get up, but Mother held him quite firmly. After wiggling for a moment, he'd give up and doze off again. Father, looking rested after his nap, had changed into his good white shalwar kameez. His long beard was neatly combed. Parvana thought he looked very handsome. When the Taliban first came and ordered all men to grow beards, Parvana had a hard time getting used to her father's face. He had never worn a beard before. Father had a hard time getting used to it too. It itched a lot at first. Now he was telling stories from history. He had been a history teacher before his school was bombed. Parvana had grown up with his stories, which made her a very good student in history class.
"It was 1880, and the British were trying to take over our country." "Did we want the British to take over?" he asked Mariam.
"No,"
Mariam answered.
"We certainly did not. Everybody comes to Afghanistan to try to take over, but we Afghans kick them all out. We are the most welcoming, hospitable people on earth. A guest to us is a king. You girls remember that. When a guest comes to your house, he must have the best of everything."
"Or she," Parvana said.
Father grinned at her.
"Or she. We Afghans do everything we can to make our guests comfortable. But if someone comes into our home or our country and acts like our enemy, then we will defend our home."
"Father, get on with the story," Parvana urged.
She had heard it before, many times, but she wanted to hear it again. Father grinned again.
"We must teach this child some patience," he said to Mother.
Parvana didn't need to look at her mother to know she was probably thinking they needed to teach her a whole lot more than that.
"All right," he relented. "On with the story." It was 1880. In the dust around the city of Kandahar, the Afghans were fighting the British. It was a terrible battle. Many were dead. The British were winning, and the Afghans were ready to give up. Their spirits were low, they had no strength to keep fighting. Surrender and capture were starting to look good to them. At least they could rest and maybe save their lives. Suddenly, a tiny girl, younger than Nuria, burst out from one of the village houses. She ran to the front of the battle and turned to face the Afghan troops. She ripped the veil off her head, and with the hot sun streaming down on her face and her bare head, she called to the troops. "We can win this battle," she cried. "Don't give up hope. Pick yourselves up, let's go." Waving her veil in the air like a battle flag, she led the troops into a final rush at the British. The British had no chance. The Afghans won the battle. The lesson here, my daughters, he looked from one to the other, is that Afghanistan has always been the home of the bravest women in the world. You are all brave women. You are all inheritors of the courage of Malalai.
We can win this battle, Mariam cried out,
waving her arm around as if she were holding a flag. Mother moved the teapot out of harm's way.
How can we be brave? Nuria asked. We can't even go outside. How can we lead men into battle? I've seen enough war. I don't want to see any more.
There are many types of battles, Father said quietly.
Including the battle with the supper dishes, Mother said. Parvana made such a face that Father started to laugh. Mariam tried to imitate it, which made Mother and Nuria laugh. Ali woke up, saw everybody laughing, and he started to laugh too. The whole family was laughing when four Taliban soldiers burst through the door. Ali was the first to react. The slam of the door against the wall shocked him, and he screamed. Mother leapt to her feet, and in an instant Ali and Mariam were in a corner of the room, shrieking behind her legs. Nuria covered herself completely with her chadar and scrunched herself into a small ball. Young women were sometimes stolen by soldiers. They were snatched from their homes, and their families never saw them again. Parvana couldn't move. She sat, as if frozen, at the edge of the supper cloth. The soldiers were giants, their piled-high turbans making them look even taller. Two of the soldiers grabbed her father. The other two began searching the apartment, kicking the remains of dinner all over the mat.
"Leave him alone," Mother screamed. "He has done nothing wrong."
"Why did you go to England for your education?" the soldiers yelled at Father. "Afghanistan doesn't need your foreign ideas."
They yanked him toward the door.
"Afghanistan needs more illiterate thugs like you," Father said.
One of the soldiers hit him in the face. Blood from his nose dripped onto his white shalwar kameez. Mother sprang at the soldiers, pounding them with her fists. She grabbed Father's arm and tried to pull him out of their grasp. One of the soldiers raised his rifle and whacked her on the head. She collapsed on the floor. The soldier hit her a few more times. Mariam and Ali screamed with every blow to their mother's back. Seeing her mother on the ground finally propelled Parvana into action. When the soldiers dragged her father outside, she flung her arms around his waist. As the soldiers pried her loose, she heard her father say, "Take care of the others, my Malalai." Then he was gone. Parvana watched, helplessly, as two soldiers dragged him down the steps, his beautiful shalwar kameez ripping on the rough cement. Then they turned a corner, and she could see them no more. Inside the room, the other two soldiers were ripping open the toshaks with knives and tossing things out of the cupboard.
"Father's books!" At the bottom of the cupboard was a secret compartment her father had built to hide the few books that had not been destroyed in one of the bombings. Some were English books about history and literature. They were kept hidden because the Taliban burned books they didn't like. They couldn't be allowed to find father's books. The soldiers had started at the top of the cupboard and were working their way down. Clothes, blankets, pots, everything landed on the floor. Closer and closer they came to the bottom shelf, the one with the false wall. Parvana watched in horror as the soldiers bent down to yank the things out of the bottom shelf.
"Get out of my house," she yelled.
She threw herself at the soldiers with such force that they both fell to the ground. She swung at them with her fists until she was knocked aside. She heard rather than felt the thwack of their sticks on her back. She kept her head hidden in her arms until the beating stopped and the soldiers went away. Mother got off the floor and had her hands full with Ali. Nuria was still curled up in a terrified ball. It was Mariam who came over to help Parvana. At the first touch of her sister's hands, Parvana flinched, thinking it was the soldiers. Mariam kept stroking her hair until Parvana realized who it was. She sat up, aching all over. She and Mariam clung to each other, trembling. She had no idea how long the family stayed like that. They remained in their spots long after Ali stopped screaming and collapsed into sleep. Chapter 3. Mother gently placed the sleeping Ali on an uncluttered spot on the floor. Mariam had fallen asleep too and was carried over to sleep beside her brother. "Let's clean up," Mother said. Slowly they put the room back together. Parvana's back and legs ached. Mother moved slowly too, all hunched over. Mother and Nuria replaced things in the cupboard. Parvana got the whisk broom down from its nail in the lavatory and swept up the spilled rice. She wiped up the spilled tea with a cloth. The ripped toshaks could be repaired, but that would wait until tomorrow. When the room looked somewhat normal again, the family, minus father, spread quilts and blankets on the floor and went to bed. Parvana couldn't sleep. She could hear her mother and Nuria tossing and turning as well. She imagined every single noise to be either father or the Taliban coming back. Each sound made Parvana hopeful and fearful at the same time. She missed her father's snoring. He had a soft, pleasant snore. During the heavy bombing of Kabul, they changed homes many times to try to find a safe place. Parvana would wake up in the middle of the night and not remember where she was. As soon as she heard her father snoring, she knew she was safe. Tonight, there was no snoring. Where was her father? Did he have a soft place to sleep? Was he cold? Was he hungry? Was he scared? Parvana had never been inside a prison, but she had other relatives who had been arrested. One of her aunts had been arrested with hundreds of other schoolgirls for protesting the Soviet occupation of her country. All the Afghan governments put their enemies in jail. "You can't be truly Afghan if you don't know someone who's been in prison," her mother sometimes said. No one had told her what prison was like. "You're too young to know these things," the grown-ups would tell her. She had to imagine it. It would be cold, Parvana decided, and dark. "Mother, turn on the lamp." She sat bolt upright with a sudden thought. "Parvana, hush. You'll wake Ali." "Light the lamp," Parvana whispered. "If they let father go, he'll need a light in the window to guide him home."
"How could he walk? He left his walking stick here. Parvana, go to sleep. You are not helping the situation."
Parvana lay down again, but she didn't sleep. The only window in the room was a small one, high up on one wall. The Taliban had ordered all windows painted over with black paint, so that no one could see the women inside.
"We won't do it," father had said. "The window is so high and so small, no one can possibly see in."
So far they had gotten away with leaving it unpainted. For short periods on clear days, the sun would come through the window in a thin stream. Ali and Mariam would sit in that ray of sunshine. Mother and Nuria would join them there, and for a few moments the sun would warm the flesh on their arms and faces. Then the planet would continue its spin and the sunbeam would be gone again. Parvana kept her eyes on the spot where she thought the window was. The night was so dark she could not distinguish between the window and the wall. She kept watch all night, until the dawn finally pushed the darkness away and morning peeked in through the window. At first light, Mother, Nuria, and Parvana stopped pretending they were asleep. Quietly, so they didn't wake the young ones, they got up and dressed. For breakfast, they chewed on leftover naan. Nuria started to heat water for tea on the little gas stove in the bathroom, but Mother stopped her.
There is boiled water left from last night. We'll just drink that. We don't have time to wait for tea. Parvana and I are going to get your father out of jail.
She said it the way she might say, Parvana and I are going to the market to get peaches. The naan fell from Parvana's lips onto the plastic cloth. She didn't argue, though. Maybe I'll get to finally see what the inside of a jail looks like, she thought. The prison was a long way from their home. Buses were not permitted to carry women who did not have a man with them. They would have to walk the whole way. What if father was being held somewhere else? What if they were stopped by the Taliban in the street? Mother wasn't supposed to be out of her home without a man, or without a note from her husband.
Nuria, write mother a note.
Don't bother, Nuria. I will not walk around my own city with a note pinned to my burqa as if I were a kindergarten child. I have a university degree.
Write the note anyway,
Parvana whispered to Nuria when Mother was in the washroom.
I'll carry it in my sleeve.
Nuria agreed. Her penmanship was more grown up than Parvana's. She quickly wrote, I give permission for my wife to be outside. She signed it with father's name.
I don't think it will do much good,
Nuria whispered, as she handed Parvana the note. Most of the Taliban don't know how to read. Parvana didn't answer. She quickly folded the note into a small square and tucked it into the wide hem of her sleeve. Nuria suddenly did something very unusual. She gave her sister a hug. Come back, she whispered. Parvana didn't want to go, but she knew that sitting at home waiting for them to return would be even harder. Hurry up, Parvana, her mother said. Your father is waiting. Parvana slipped her feet into her sandals and wound her chador around her head. She followed Mother out the door. Helping Mother down the broken stairs was a little like helping Father, as the billowing burqa made it hard for her to see where she was going. Mother hesitated at the bottom of the stairs. Parvana thought she might be having second thoughts. After that moment, though, her mother pulled herself up to her full height, straightened her back, and plunged into the Kabul street. Parvana rushed after her. She had to run to keep up with her mother's long, quick steps, but she didn't dare fall behind. There were a few other women in the street, and they all wore the regulation burqa, which made them all look alike. If Parvana lost track of her mother, she was afraid she'd never find her again. Now and then her mother stopped beside a man and a woman, or a small group of men, or even a peddler boy, and held out a photograph of father. She didn't say anything, just showed them the photo. Parvana held her breath every time her mother did this. Photographs were illegal. Any one of these people could turn Parvana and her mother over to the militia. But everyone looked at the photo, then shook their heads. Many people had been arrested. Many people had disappeared. They knew what Mother was asking without her having to say anything. Poli Shahri prison was a long walk from Parvana's home. By the time the huge fortress came into view, her legs were sore, her feet ached, and worst of all, she was scared all over. The prison was dark and ugly, and it made Parvana feel even smaller. Malalai wouldn't be afraid, Parvana knew. Malalai would form an army and lead it in a storming of the prison. Malalai would lick her lips at such a challenge. Her knees wouldn't be shaking as Parvana's were. If Parvana's mother was scared, she didn't show it. She marched straight up to the prison gates and said to the guard, I'm here for my husband. The guards ignored her. I'm here for my husband, Mother said again. She took out father's photograph and held it in front of the face of one of the guards. He was arrested last night. He has committed no crime, and I want him released. More guards began to gather. Parvana gave a little tug on her mother's burqa. Her mother ignored her. I'm here for my husband, she kept saying, louder and louder. Parvana tugged harder on the loose cloth of the burqa. Hold steady, my little Malalai, she heard her father say in her mind. Suddenly, she felt very calm. I'm here for my father, she called out. Her mother looked down at her through the screen over her eyes. She reached down and took Parvana's hand.
"I'm here for my husband," she called again.
Over and over, Parvana and her mother kept yelling out their mission. More and more men came to stare at them.
"Be quiet," ordered one of the guards. "You should not be here. Go from this place. Go back to your home."
One of the soldiers snatched the photo of Parvana's father and tore it into pieces. Another started hitting her mother with a stick.
"Release my husband," her mother kept saying.
Another soldier joined in the beating. He hit Parvana too. Although he did not hit her very hard, Parvana fell to the ground, her body covering the pieces of her father's photograph. In a flash, she tucked the pieces out of sight, under her chadar. Her mother was also on the ground, the soldier's sticks hitting her across her back. Parvana leapt to her feet.
"Stop! Stop it! We'll go now, we'll go!"
She grabbed the arm of one of her mother's attackers. He shook her off, as if she were a fly.
"Who are you to tell me what to do?"
But he did lower his stick.
"Get out of here,"
he spat at Parvana and her mother. Parvana knelt down, took her mother's arm and helped her to her feet. Slowly, with her mother leaning on her for support, they hobbled away from the prison. Chapter 4. It was very late by the time Parvana and her mother returned home from the prison. Parvana was so tired she had to lean against mother to make it up the stairs, the way father used to lean against her. She had stopped thinking of anything but the pain that seemed to be in every part of her body, from the top of her head to the bottom of her feet. Her feet burned and stung with every step. When she took off her sandals, she could see why. Her feet, unused to walking such long distances, were covered with blisters. Most of the blisters had broken, and her feet were bloody and raw. Nuria and Mariam's eyes widened when they saw the mess of Parvana's feet. They grew wider still when they saw their mother's feet. They were even more torn up and bloody than Parvana's. Parvana realized that mother hadn't been out of the house since the Taliban had taken over Kabul 1.5 years before. She could have gone out. She had a burqa, and father would have gone with her any time she wanted. Many husbands were happy to make their wives stay home, but not father.
"Fatana, you are a writer," he often said. "You must come out into the city and see what is happening. Otherwise, how will you know what to write about?"
"Who would read what I write? Am I allowed to publish? No. Then what is the point of writing? And what is the point of looking? Besides, it will not be for long. The Afghan people are smart and strong. They will kick these Taliban out. When that happens, when we have a decent government in Afghanistan, then I will go out again. Until then, I will stay here."
"It takes work to make a decent government," father said. "You are a writer. You must do your work. If we had left Afghanistan when we had the chance, I could be doing my work. We are Afghans. This is our home. If all the educated people leave, who will rebuild the country?"
It was an argument Parvana's parents had often. When the whole family lived in one room, there were no secrets. Mother's feet were so bad from the long walk that she could barely make it into the room. Parvana had been so preoccupied with her own pain and exhaustion, she hadn't given any thought to what her mother had been going through. Nuria tried to help, but mother just waved her away. She threw her burqa down on the floor. Her face was stained with tears and sweat. She collapsed onto the tushak where father had taken his nap just yesterday. Mother cried for a long, long time. Nuria sponged off the part of her face that wasn't buried in the pillow. She washed the dust from the wounds in her mother's feet. Mother acted as if Nuria wasn't there at all. Finally, Nuria spread a light blanket over her. It was a long time before the sobs stopped, and mother fell asleep. While Nuria tried to look after mother, Mariam looked after Parvana. Biting her tongue in concentration, she carried a basin of water over to where Parvana was sitting. She didn't spill a drop. She wiped Parvana's face with a cloth she wasn't quite able to wring out. Drips from the cloth ran down Parvana's neck. The water felt good. She soaked her feet in the basin, and that felt good too. She sat with her feet in the basin while Nuria got supper.
They wouldn't tell us anything about Father, Parvana told her sister.